Welcome to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast, conversations with women who have found creative ways to travel more. This is episode 59, and I'm your host, Jet Set Lizette. Today I talk with my dear and longtime friend, Demetra Smith. Demetra is a talented musician and the singer for multiple bands, including Static People and Exes with Benefits. She's also an activist who has worked with a long list of civil rights organizations and is the former chair of the Sonoma County Commission on Human Rights. Demetra talks about her early transformative travel experiences, some of her favorite destinations, and how travel has impacted her, especially as a Black woman. She also shares what led her to decide to move to France, some lesser-known truths about that country's history, and what it's been like so far to be living abroad. Demetra has always inspired me on so many levels, so it was a real pleasure to have her on the show. Before we begin, I want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Waypoint Goods, a company that helps empower women to explore the world by designing accessories that support and inspire travel. I love their signature travel scarf in beautiful custom patterns with a hidden zipper pocket to keep your valuables safe. It will keep you warm on cold flights while keeping your essentials at your fingertips. Waypoint Goods also offers destination-inspired home decor, from candles to laser-cut city maps. For a 15% discount, visit waypointgoods.com and enter JetSet at checkout. This episode is also sponsored by Wanderful. They are holding the first major outdoor travel festival by and for women in downtown New Orleans, March 12th and 13th, 2022, and they have two tickets to give away to listeners. This special event will have live music, inspiring speakers, yoga, a parade in the French Quarter, and so much more. Enter to win at wanderfestevent.com/jetset. They'll pick a winner on February 1st, and if you have your tickets already, you'll get refunded if you win. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the interview. All right. Well, welcome, Demetra, to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. It is truly a pleasure to have you here with me today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you are sitting right now in Pontarlier, I believe is how it's said.
That's a great pronunciation.
Thank you. Very close to the Swiss border, near the Swiss Alps, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm especially glad to have you on, coming at me from all that distance. So let's just kick off with the first question I always ask all my guests, which is, what sparked your love of travel?
You know, I think it was just being young and nerdy and being into maps. So I love maps. I used to spend a lot of time looking at atlases and just tripping on that, like, wow, that stuff is out there, you know? And when I was in school, we had to take 3 years of Latin. And then after that, we got to choose French, German, or Spanish. And at that time, I was dreaming of, and am still dreaming of, and planning to visit West Africa. And I was like, they speak French over there because of colonization, right? Which I don't like, but I love the fact that I could learn a language that would allow me to communicate with people over there. So I chose French. And then from there, it just made me want to travel.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I just, once I did, when I was 17, that was first 16, first time I left the country. And I just have always wanted to do more. So
where did you go when you first left the country?
I actually went to Paris. And, you know, I certainly couldn't afford it. Neither could my parents. I had a friend whose parents were kind enough to say, you know, we're going to cover this ticket. And then I worked at my little minimum wage candy store job to pay that off. And I was so grateful. So yeah, we went to Paris for 2 weeks in the summer of 1987. Totally different experience. It was dicey. I'll just say that. We had a lot of dicey experiences, but it was amazing. There were payphones. I remember plugging some francs into the payphone to call my parents, you know, and just let them know, okay, I'm alive. I'm still alive.
Wow.
But then you get the bug and you just want to keep going, you know.
Yeah. How was it dicey, I have to ask?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, Paris is a huge city. And, you know, in the 80s, I mean, for people that have done any, if you've done any research or, you know, even there's a lot of movies about this, you know, in Paris, there was a lot going on in the 80s. You know, there was a lot of like neo-Nazi skinhead activity. Of course, we know it's a international place where people are coming and going from all over the world. It definitely was like a dicey, there were some dicey city things that happened, you know, like dudes on the metro sexually assaulting people, like people following you, like there was a knife incident, like there was a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you just got the sense that, especially with Paris, you have an idea of what it's going to be like. And I think that's true of any place. And then you get there and it was like, wow, this is a big city. There's a lot going on. Like, I need to have my wits about me here. So, and I also think that we were, as young women, I think we were maybe seen as targets. You know what I'm saying? But we still took the metro everywhere and we walked everywhere and we went to cemeteries and we looked at all the architecture and ate all the food. And I remember we got into this nightclub. It was one of these kind of crazy nightclubs where everybody's standing out in a line and pointing at who can get in. And we were just so excited to go in there and the music was horrible. It's like, okay, the music's not really the strong point here. That was funny. But the big victory of that trip was there was a song that was super popular at the time. Like I would hear it at parties. It's called C'est Comme Ça. And it's by this band, Les Rita Mitsuko. And I absolutely needed to have that vinyl. So I just went and combed the city until I found that record. So I was willing to like put up with anything to get that vinyl.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't surprise me, musician, that you are. You're all about music. You're like, okay, what was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really relate to a lot of what you're talking about. I mean, I just have to say, right, we've been friends since we were in third grade. Fourth grade.
I was 7 or 8. Yeah.
Yeah. With a little gap in between, we right. lost track of each other for a while. But it's so funny to me that like, okay, we both speak French.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's just so many things. Being, you know, Black, wanting to go to Africa. I mean, everything yeah. you were saying, I'm like, that's exactly all my feelings about it, you know? are we the same person? Anyway, no, we're not. Okay. So moving on, I did want to also ask you, what are some of the more memorable travel experiences you've had? Like if you have a couple trips from, you know, either early on or more recently in your life that you were like, wow, that trip was amazing.
You know, I would have to say a trip to Nepal that I took in 1996 was incredible. There was a friend of mine who is kind of like an extended family member, kind of like a little sister. And she was there for a year for a study abroad program. And her mom, you know, was kind of hoping that I could go there and kind of check on her and spend some time. So she helped me get over there. And she was living with a Brahmin Chetri family. They were farmers, traditional farmers, and they lived about 3 hours outside of Kathmandu. So my experience was not at all, oh, hey, I'm going to Kathmandu and I'm going to stay in a hotel. It wasn't like that at all. It was, you know, living in a traditional Brahmin Chetri home with earthen floors, and they had a water buffalo. So I got to have fresh water buffalo chai, which was incredible. And all the amazing food that they were making that came out of their family garden. And if we wanted to go to the town, we would have to walk, you know, 3 miles on a dirt road and then catch the bus for a couple of hours and go into Kathmandu. And that's what it took for us to get into town. And I'm mentioning that because the mom of the household, Amma, she would wake up at 3 a.m. and pick the spinach from the family garden, put it in a huge basket that went around her forehead that I couldn't even lift. And she would go all the way into town, taking the same route, sell all the spinach, and be back by 7:30 or 8 to make breakfast for everyone with a smile and say things like, I sell my spinach fastest because I have the best smile. You know, so it was a very humbling experience to just see how other people are living. And that really stuck with me. Another one was also going to El Salvador when I was working for an import-export company, and we were working with artisans going all over the country and seeing still the lingering effects of the Civil War there. That was really, that marked me and, you know, was definitely part of why I think I got into human rights work. The traveling, there's a link between the traveling and the human rights work. So I'm grateful for those experiences. The Nepal trip was particularly, at the end of it, I actually had to leave early because a friend of mine who lives in Kathmandu said, you know, there's probably going to be a Maoist uprising and you should leave. You should leave on this day and not the day you're planning to leave. I am not going to tell you how I know that information, but I did end up leaving and there was a huge uprising the next day. I ended up having to fly to Thailand and spending 3 days alone in Bangkok, which was, that was not fun. That was rough.
Wow.
There were some difficult things that happened. But again, you know, I started catching the bus alone in Seattle when I was 10. So I got street smarts and, you know, you just activate it. You're like, okay, I'm going to push this dresser in front of the door tonight. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, being a woman traveling alone, it's, I'm not saying it's dangerous all the time, but, you know, things can happen. So.
Well, and I think the important thing is, like you said, you still went to travel, like after initially some of that stuff in Paris, you still were like, I got to do this.
Yeah.
And then you went and had some incredible experiences that, as you said, really connect to your work with human rights. So maybe we could talk a little bit about that. Like, how has travel, did travel continue to intersect with some of that, with the human rights focus in your life?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, I mean, I'm just going to say it, you know, I mentioned briefly about having, you know, kind of an idea of France. You know, we have this beautiful idea of France. It's so gorgeous, and Paris and the coffee and the croissants and all of this. And that all of that stuff is true. What we don't really learn about is the legacy of slavery that France has and colonization, you know, in Africa, in the Caribbean, in the United States, et cetera. And so there's a narrative that I would hear from French people like, well, we don't really have that here. It's not as bad, you know, or America's on another level. And I would say, well, no, it's actually the same. It just happened off of the continent, off of outside of the borders. So it was sanitized. So it's been interesting for me over the past 20 years that I've been coming here to delve more deeply into that history, to learn more about how the French Revolution is so connected to the Haitian Revolution in terms of, you know, enslaved Africans saying, you know, we're actually citizens as well. And so we are actually not going to stand for this. And then how slavery was reinstituted by Napoleon. So I, you know, I'm a history geek. I'm an amateur historian, I would say. So I really get into this stuff. And then the town that I'm sitting in is a town where Toussaint Louverture, the revolutionary leader of Haiti, was imprisoned by Napoleon here. And so you can actually go to the chateau, the castle where he was imprisoned, and it's a pilgrimage for Haitian people. And so every time I come here, I go and pay my respects, and I try to learn more about that, and especially with what Haitians have endured and continue to endure because of the actions of the French government and the United States. It's like I'm sitting in an area where human rights is just all around me.
Wow, I didn't know that history.
It's deep.
Yeah, particularly where you are now. So can't wait to come visit and learn more about everything. I also wanted to say, I remember you went to Belize one time. Is there anything you wanted to share about that experience?
Yeah, I loved Belize. I went twice. I went with my partner and my son and his friend. We had always wanted to go there. A friend of ours had told us how amazing it was. And so we went to Key Calker, which is go slow is the island, the motto of the island. So, you know, of course, I don't want to be in the place where there's the nightclubs and people partying and all that. So this place is amazing because it's just, there's no cars. It's just bicycles and electric golf carts and people walking. And what I loved most about Belize is I blended in. I mean, I did in Nepal as well. And I did in El Salvador as well, you know. But I guess Belize is just so, it's so diverse. You know, you've got people from the Yucatan Peninsula. You've got Guatemalans, you've got Hondurans, you've got, you know, native Belizeans, you've got Garifuna folks. You know, you have this whole, an indigenous people, and you've got this whole mix of people, and, you know, like Rastafarians, and it's just this whole mix. And I love that. I love it. It's just sort of like, I remember when we went there with my mom, and then, you know, when we got off the plane, like, everyone's Black, and you're just like, yes, you know, and they're like, Hey, auntie, you know, they're like grabbing my mom and making sure she gets down the steps. And I was just like, okay, this is, you know what? I'm moving here. That's how we took her there for her 80th birthday. And it's a place that I just love. It's so beautiful. Everyone should go.
Yeah.
In small doses.
I can't wait to go there. And it's incredible. You know, when you talk about that, that's how I feel when I go to Brazil. I'm like, oh, I vanish here, kind of. It's just a great feeling of just like, I fit in.
Right. You go into the diaspora. You're in the diaspora.
Yeah.
And people are not looking at you like, where are you in this space? I mean, I'm mentioning that because I live in Sonoma County when I'm in the States. And, you know, people like to think of California as this incredibly progressive place. But it's not. How about that? I'm just going to say it. It's not.
Yep.
We're still dealing with being in spaces. If you're in a space where there's not a lot of diversity, there's not a lot of BIPOC folks, people are like, what are you doing in my wine country vacation?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a sense of like something I didn't even realize, right? Or I knew that, you know, being brown, showing up somewhere, you always have that, like, I always have that discussion, like, how am I going to land? Like, how is my presence going to land where I'm walking into, being in Seattle,
right,
and, you know, a lot of the United States? And then when I went into, like, my first time in a Brazil dance class, and literally that's when it hit me that usually in dance class in Seattle, I'm like one of a few
right.
brown people, if I'm lucky. There was one white person.
Yeah, just no one cares. People are like, yeah, okay.
They're
this
like,
is
whatever.
Normal. This is normal.
So it just feels different, which... Well, yeah, that's a perfect segue into sort of, I want to talk about what you're doing now, how you've, you know, you're in a transitionary period,
yeah.
I would say. So why don't you talk a little bit about that and what, you know, has led you to being in France right now?
Yeah. I mean, I'm transitioning away from the US right now. I mean, that's kind of it's not happening immediately. Of course, I've been living in the U.S. my whole life, so it's going to take a while to transition out. But, you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to buy an apartment here from my partner's dad that he's been building for 20 years, and we're taking it over, and we're finishing it. So we came here to work on that, and you know, again, like Pontarlier is not, it's not a place that it doesn't have everything for me. It's a beautiful place in terms of the water. There's water here. There's no earthquakes. There's no forest fires. There's no drought, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's incredibly green. It's on the same latitude as Seattle. So it reminds me of Seattle. You know, this it's kind of a rainforest, and so, but it's a higher altitude. It's 3,000 feet in altitude, so there's more snow and stuff. But it's an amazing central location for me. It's a great place to have a base to go explore, you know, to go to Spain, to go to Morocco, to go to Portugal, to go to Italy, to go to Greece, to go to the continent. So it's a great base for me, and I'm really excited about it. And, you know, I mean, I spent 10 years as the chair and vice chair of a human rights commission in the county where I live. And that work got really, really intense. And so it's great to take a break. And I'm really grateful to be here because I have started working on a graphic novel about my experiences incorporating Sonoma County history. I'm not going to draw it because it would take me too long. It would probably take years for me to do this. But I'm hoping to partner with different artists from each community that I'm writing about so that we can be telling our own stories. And I'm really excited about that. So just traveling is a privilege. So I'm grateful for that. and I'm grateful to have the space to be able to start writing. I wouldn't have been able to do this in Sonoma County. It was just too, I was on the front lines too much. So it's nice to get away, have some perspective. I'm thinking about James Baldwin and his, Eddie Glaude talks about this in the book Begin Again, which came out recently. I read it last year. He talks about how Baldwin, you know, we all know the story, how Baldwin left and spent time in Turkey, Istanbul, and Paris. And, but he could never truly, you can never truly leave the United States, right? Because you see what your people are going through. You have your own history. And so I continue to do this human rights work from over here. I've got Zoom meetings. I've got reports I'm working on and this book. And I'm hoping that this book will provide, I think, the closure that I need to speak about things that that aren't spoken about, and to open this place to folks that have the means and the ability to come. I keep telling people, just get over here. You can stay here for free. If you go off season, it won't be that expensive. I know we have COVID and stuff, but my mom's coming in a couple days for a month, so I'm excited to share this with people. Grateful, just grateful.
Wow, and you know, I just love this idea of travel as a way, well, really it's like moving abroad at that point, but like, you know, moving to another location to be able to get perspective, to take a break, mm-hmm. to have space, but also as a base, like that idea of, you know, I can use this as a way to even travel more, right? Because I'm in a place where there's so many different borders and countries all around me, including being closer to the African continent. And it's something that I aspire to do myself. So I'm really been watching your plans with a lot of like, yes, you know, and, I'm planning also, I probably won't be moving abroad right now, but I'm definitely going to take time to travel a lot more over the next few years.
Right. Yeah. Our plan is to, I mean, again, no surprise, a lot of people are doing this, but I definitely do want to get some kind of a camping vehicle and a couple of bikes. This is something that we've planned to do for a long, long time. And we had planned to travel around the United States doing this, but that has changed for me. I'm not feeling it anymore, but I am feeling it here. So it's like, you want to go to Norway? You know, we could literally drive.
Wow.
So I'm excited about that idea of, you know, being able to kind of be a little bit more nomadic. As far as France goes, I think I personally would be happier culturally, as in terms of all the different aspects of culture, if I was in Paris or Marseille. You know, there's this organization called Mwasi Afrofeminist Collective, who I love. And so I would love to be going to all their meetings and stuff. So I hope to be going down there and connecting with them at some point. And then, but there's also like lots of Black women here on the streets of Pontarlier. There's a lot more diversity here than there was. And now I'm like, bonjour, madame. Like, I'm saying hi to everybody. I'm like, hey, I'm going to try to get some numbers, try to like start some groups.
It's in your blood. You're like, I need to just connect.
I'm going to keep doing it. Let's get together and talk and see if we can, because I'm like, there's no hair products at the store. So right. Can we talk about that? We need to like... do some actions.
Well, and you know, when, you know, I was supposed to come visit you, we rescheduled that or postponed it. But whenever we get there, one thing I know I want to do is go to Paris and take a lot of the Afro beats and dance classes, like so many things. But, yeah.
I know, you know, I would have told you there's no hair products here, so you better
bring my own.
There's an African store in Switzerland in Lausanne where you can go get all the products, and they do hair and they got fabric and food. And so I'm going to make a little pilgrimage over there.
Sweet. Love it. Can't wait to come and like explore with you.
Yes. Just a few quick facts about Pontarlier. People should know that it is the capital of Comté cheese. What Americans say Comté or Comté. Comté, this is where all the Comté cheese comes from. This is also where all the absinthe comes from. And it's, you know, it's kind of a mystical place. There's a lot of legends of like sorcery and wolves and owls and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's spooky. It's kind of spooky here.
Sounds fascinating.
Beautiful. Yeah.
One question I ask always is, you know, how has travel changed you? And I think you've already touched on that, but I do want to talk about a little bit more about that perspective. Travel as a Black woman, you know, just what has travel brought to you?
I think it's brought a more honed lens on what it is to be us walking in the world. you know, with the caveat that, you know, oppression in this world is first and foremost a reflection of melanin. So I always bring that up because, you know, monoracial Black folks and melanin is related to that. So I'm not going to try to act like my experience is going to be the same as it is for everybody else. I always just want to mention that. But, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of a dichotomy of, one, being left alone, like not being bothered in the way that I feel bothered. And then the other side of that, it's always still the same. I mean, the neighbor grabbed my hair yesterday. Super sweet lady, super nice, almost 90. We were chatting and she reached out and grabbed my hair and said, "This isn't your hair, is it?" And I was like, damn. like wherever you go, there you are. You know what I'm saying? Or there's a different concept of Blackness here. So, you know, French people will be like, "Well, you're not really Black." And I'm like, well, you know, for me personally and in the United States and our history, it's not really a question of like your level of melanin. Like I am a Black woman, you know, so it's not a question of how much melanin I have. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there's things like that that insert themselves into the experience. I used to get really upset about this stuff and it used to really interfere with my experience. But now I'm just like, I have comebacks. I will turn that back into a question for them. So they reflect, is this emotional labor? Yes. But I would rather use humor and not take on whatever they're bringing and then just go on my way. And so I guess it's made me realize also that, again, that we're part of a diaspora. You know, we are part of a diaspora and I'm grateful for that. And I wish that it was easier to travel. You know what I mean? I would like it to be accessible for people. Travel is beautiful. Immigration is beautiful. And traveling has just, it can be such a luxury thing. And I think I want more Black folks to be able to leave the U.S. and experience other places, you know, where we can experience the diaspora. I think it helps with dealing with the United States. For me, it does anyway, to be like, hey, there's more than this, you know, and I miss it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't get Wu-Tang in France. You get I Am. You don't get Wu-Tang. You know what I mean? There's also a specific thing about Black Americans that I miss. I miss when I travel as well. I miss that. We're very specific and not monolithic as a people. You know, and there's just a way that we are that I miss. I miss that. So I don't know if there's any place where I'll ever be completely happy. Belize.
There you go. Okay. That's the answer.
Belize.
Belize is the answer.
Walking barefoot, getting my pineapples, just done.
Right.
You know,
I'll be living in Brazil. We could do like back and forth exchange, like visiting each other.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
But yeah, I think you said something really important too about the travel, maybe helping to, reconnect in a way, or it's like, okay, I need a break. I need a break from the United States.
Yeah.
You know, as a woman of color, I need a break. And then, yeah. But then I get away and I get some perspective. And then also I can see what it is I love about the United States.
Right.
Because there are still some things, or the people, like you said,
there's
some stuff that's just undeniably fabulous about home, but there's been so much drama here mm-hmm. for so long. That
yeah,
I know for me, traveling as a Black woman, I mean, I started doing it early and I immediately recognized that it just felt good to step away from the United States. It really was
right.
Refreshing.
It is. I mean, I think it's the microaggressions. That's what I feel is reduced, greatly reduced. You know what I mean? I mean, there's anti-Blackness in France too. It's called négrophobie in French. And Moissy Afro Collective talks about it all the time. But it's that sort of like, can I help you? I don't get that. You know, it's just bonjour, madame. Like, just like nobody cares. You're here to do business, buy in the grocery store, whatever. Like nobody, people are very polite. They're like, oh, excuse me. You know, it's just, you know, it's not like, well, are you local? Well, can I see your ID? You know, this just is removed. And I just really love that. I really enjoy that. But I mean, I'm from California. I'm from Seattle originally, but I live in California. It's like, you do miss, I've been making pico de gallo and I've been making, you know, I buy all these spices. I've been making all this food and I'm like, you know what? I had some fried fish the other day and I was like, you know what? I need some hot sauce in my purse.
Yeah.
This is a thing. I'm like, I don't know what happened with this fish, but it's a problem. You know what I mean? So there's those things that I miss. There's a restaurant here called O Tacos, O apostrophe Tacos. I'm like, first of all, that's Irish. Something is wrong. Like, those aren't, you know what? Just no, like, that's wrong. Those are not tacos. You need to stop. You know, so it's like,
O Tacos.
It's funny.
I know that.
O Tacos.
I have to say.
Top of the morning to you. The old O Tacos. I don't understand.
When I lived in Italy for a little while when I was 19, and also other times I've traveled longer, the first thing I do when I get back is I eat Mexican food. It's just like,
right.
Because I can't do the O Tacos for very long.
Right, right. Oh, and one more thing about the diaspora and food, like, you know, High on the Hog, which you have
I've seen that. Okay. I love it.
Right. Okay. So that gets really illustrated for me when I come here. I go shopping and I'm like, man, I need cumin. I need cayenne. I need all this stuff. I need these spices. And, you know, it's true that all of the recipes that I grew up with, right? It's like my family is from the Blue Ridge Mountains, Rappahannock County, Virginia, and Cartersville, Georgia. And they're specific with a connection to New Orleans. And there's a specific recipes that come from the family. And it's like, I never really thought about it as I was growing up. Like, as my mom was cooking, it's like, what is she going to get? Onions and peppers and garlic. That's how she's going to be starting anything, whether it's a stew or, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's how I start my cooking, you know? And it's interesting, like I've made food for people here and they're like, oh, this is kind of spicy. And I'm like, what? No, it isn't. Y'all are bland. You put cream on stuff and it's wrong. So thankfully there's like beautiful organic stores here and it's not expensive like it. It's not a luxury to go to the health food store here. It's more expensive than like the big ass grocery store, but it's accessible. You know what I'm saying? So I get fresh produce. I get all the spices and I'm loving it. I like to eat out, but I also want to make my own food and be in my own space. That's what it is. Having this apartment, I finally have my own space with my own music, the colors that I want on the walls. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And all of that. And so that's, again, it's a privilege to have this and I'm really grateful. And I want to share it with everybody.
Well, I can't wait to come and see your amazing new place and just experience a little bit of what you're experiencing. And I'm really grateful that you came on the show to talk about it. There's so much that you've said that just resonated with me. Any final tips or advice for women wanting to travel more?
I just say, do it. I mean, I would say do it. There's no reason not to do it. You know, I'm 51. I just turned 51. And I'm already starting to have that sense of like, oh my goodness, I am not going to see everything in my lifetime. And things have shifted geopolitically. There's a lot of places in the world that I have dreamed of visiting that I can't visit right now. And so there's never a better time than the present to do it, you know? And I just think for people that are thinking about it, just do it, you know? And, of course, you know, there's something magical about traveling. You have bad things happen, but then there's great things that happen. You know, you connect with amazing people and there's things that happen that you couldn't possibly plan for. And so I think it's a great way to find out who you are, to learn, uncover more about yourself, and really, not to be cliche, but it really is like one planet, you know? And so the most you can try to understand and experience other people's cultures and do it. It makes the world a better place.
Amen to that. Okay, where can people find you if they want to see what you're up to?
You can Google Demetra Smith Human Rights, and that will bring up all of the work that I've been doing over the past decade. In particular, the work that I did around George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. There's also the Sonoma County Human Rights Visibility Project. It is the first human rights reporting website in 18 languages in the history of the state of California, launched that last year. And I'm also the co-sponsor of AB 655, the CLEAR Act, stands for the California Law Enforcement Accountability Reform Act. It is the first law in the state of California to address white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement, which we know is as old as the hills, but it literally is a thing that we have to deal with. So people can do that. And then at some point, I do actually have a website, demetrasmith.com, but it just has a picture of me standing in front of a colonial dude in a museum in Paris, flipping him off, because I was actually there to see Jean-Michel Basquiat's exhibit. So that's how Sweet. I was feeling that day. Yep. So that's my placeholder until I
love it.
Until I get it done. But yeah, I'm out there.
And again, thanks so much. You're a role model for me. I mean, I feel like we're sisters. We've known each other a long time, but you're also a role model for all the work that you do in the world. And I also love now, again, role model, you're taking a really good break and giving yourself space that you need. So thanks for coming on the show and talking about all of it. And I know we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. This episode was produced by my podcast manager, Marcy Page. Show notes and resource links can be found at jetsetlizette.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and tell your friends about the show. Thanks so much for tuning in and getting some travel inspiration. Remember, life is short, travel more.